Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, and I appreciate your listenership. This is your host, Lewis, as usual, and this is Let Me Just Say This with my special guest, Keyote, as we get ready to tackle on and absolutely destroy the debacle that was Dark Phoenix. What's up, Keyote?
Lewis, it is a pleasure, my friend, to be on your show tonight. I look forward to destroying a couple of topics tonight, my friend. I'm in that kind of mood tonight, Lewis. In that kind of mood.
Absolutely. This is actually history in the making because Keyote and I are actually doing two episodes tonight. So
yes, sir.
Once you get to this episode on the archives, you can go ahead and check out our next episode, which is going to be tackling the other debacle in the pro wrestling world that happened this past weekend, which is Goldberg versus Undertaker. But let's do one fiasco at a time.
Yeah.
So this past weekend saw the release of Dark Phoenix. It's not even titled X-Men Dark Phoenix because they didn't, for whatever reason, just, I don't know, maybe they didn't want to associate it with the X-Men title, which doesn't make any type of sense. It's just the last X-Men film in the franchise.
Exactly.
But anyway, I digress. So before we get into our reactions and our reviews, I just want to put out there that what makes this such a sad, sad way to end this journey, this near two-decade journey, is the fact that it only grossed $35 million opening weekend at the box office.
Shocking.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah. Shocking, Lewis. That's one of the bigger shocks that that I came across. $35 million for the last X-Men film. I mean, listen, I don't even think it was so much the marketing. I think it was there were just better movies out this weekend, right? Like there were just, it was a big movie weekend as far as what was out. I mean, you had, you know, the Secret Life of Pets came out, you know, for the kids. You still have Godzilla, you have Rocket Man, you have Aladdin. So there are some movies, John Wick 3.
Absolutely.
You know, people are still going to see some of the Avengers films. Like these movies are still, and they're still out. And also the weather has been really good in certain spots. So I'm assuming a lot of people have just been not going to the movies. But man,
well, unless you're in Texas, because it's been dead hot over here. I think people would rather sit in a movie theater where it's nice and cool.
Well, yeah, unless you're in Texas, yeah, exactly. But I mean, overall, man, very disappointing, dude. Like, I don't even know what to say.
Yeah, I don't know what to say either. I mean, one thing I forgot to do for this episode was look up all the box office opening weekend numbers for the X-Men franchise, but from what I can remember, right, I'll just go down the list real quick. So in 2000, the first X-Men film, that grossed $54 to $55 million opening weekend, which was a huge deal in the year 2000, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
Then in 2003, X2 grossed a whopping $86 million, which was the fourth highest grossing opening weekend at the time.
Isn't that
was
crazy,
also,
man?
A big deal. Yeah, I know, right?
86 million
is like nothing these days.
That's crazy. Wow.
Yeah, it was. I remember watching it on the news when it came out. It was like, they were like, oh, yeah, this is the fourth highest opening for a film ever in box office history. And I was like, holy shit, that's something to be proud of. You know, fast forward 16 years later, it's not that big of an accomplishment.
Yeah, man. The Avengers, Avengers, you know, they make that in their sleep. Like, I mean,
yeah,
crazy.
Yeah, Endgame probably made that in the first hour.
Definitely the first, yeah. Within the first 2 days, yeah, not even like a day.
So, and then X-Men The Last Stand in 2006, that came out Memorial Day weekend. So when you take in Memorial Day weekend into account, I believe it was like somewhere in the 120s, $120 million or something like that.
Okay.
Then X-Men Origins Wolverine, as shitty of a film as that was, that actually grossed well over $80 million opening weekend.
Yeah, and what year was that?
That was 2009.
That's 2009.
Okay. Yeah, so we're getting 2009. We're getting to the point where we're starting to see more box office records, and 80 right. something million for a piss poor Wolverine movie. You got to consider that a huge success.
Definitely.
Then you had X-Men First Class in 2011. That made in the ballpark around 55 million, somewhere between 50 and 55 million, which was modest because, again, they were it was more of a prequel to the franchise, and they were kind of like hitting the reset button on the franchise in a sense.
A very good film, by the way.
Yeah, I loved it. I was at the world premiere, actually.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I was in the audience with Michael Fassbender, Kevin Bacon.
Are you serious?
Yes, I was at the Ziegfeld.
Not in Manhattan?
Yeah, because at the time I was working in Midtown in the Fox News building, so they were giving out passes to the world premiere. And I was like, shit, I'm in there. So me and my boy Carlos, shout out to Carlos, I invited him, and we got to see all the stars, and we literally met Michael Fassbender on the way out of the theater. He was in the lobby. I went up to him and said, wow, you were a scene stealer. Just, you had an amazing performance. We were just geeking out. He was the nicest guy you can imagine. He was just smiling, and he was just very modest. He was nice, just like, thank you so much. I really appreciate the love.
Wow, man, that's awesome. I didn't know that, man. You went to a world premiere of an X-Men film?
Yes. I mean, everybody was there. I think Jennifer Lawrence might have even been there too, but like it was like the majority of the cast that was there. James McAvoy was there too.
Now, here's a question for you, Lewis. That world premieres, are they actually watching their film?
Yes, they're watching, unless they were invited to a screening prior to. Yeah, they're watching their film with the audience.
That's crazy.
I kept on glancing over to the middle section, and I'm looking at Kevin Bacon, Michael Fassbender, like just seeing their react. It was one of the dopest experiences ever as a film fan.
That is crazy, man. Wow, that's amazing.
And you know what sucks? We couldn't take a picture of Michael Fassbender because they had confiscated our phones.
Oh, they took the phone.
Yeah. It was an exclusive screen. It was a world premiere. So they didn't want that screener to leak. So yeah, we couldn't even take pictures if we wanted to. So I just have word of mouth.
So I guess I have to believe you.
Yeah, you have to believe me. Either that or like, Lewis, man, you're a fucking liar. You didn't meet Michael Fassbender.
Man, that's dope. Wow.
Oh yeah, we met Rose Byrne walking out of the theater too.
I love
it. But Rose Byrne wasn't that big at the time, but she was on the verge of coming out with Bridesmaids.
I love Rose Byrne, man.
She's great. She's awesome.
Yeah,
she was another pleasant person to meet and interact with. But in any case, I'm going off on a tangent, but I just thought I'd mention that with X-Men First Class.
Amazing. Nice.
Yeah. So then 2013, you have the Wolverine, which again, in the 50s, so not too bad. Then you got X-Men Days of Future Past in 2014. That grossed in the ballpark of like 90-something million. So very good opening.
So these are opening weekends. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, this is just opening weekend. Then you have, I guess we're counting Deadpool too, because that's part of the franchise. So we all know the history with Deadpool. Deadpool, the first R-rated movie to gross that much opening weekend. It was like 130-something million or whatever it was.
Yep,
yeah,
yep.
It shattered like every record you could think of for R-rated films.
Yes.
Later that year, that summer, X-Men Apocalypse, a terrible film. And you know, I don't actually remember what the opening weekend was for that off the top of my head, but it wasn't anything earth-shattering. It didn't break any box office records by any means. So 2017, you get Logan. I don't quite remember what the opening weekend was for that, but I'm going to assume it was somewhere between 80 and 90 million for Logan. Okay. Because I remember that was big at the time. And Logan is still one of my all-time favorite, forget X-Men movies, it's one of my all-time favorite superhero movies, period.
Really?
Yeah, that's gonna, watch, you go, it's only been 2 years, but you go back and watch Logan, you're gonna see what I'm talking about. And Logan is very, very, very well received with not just the film community, but also with the comic book X-Men fan community as well. A lot of people love Logan, like, they consider it the Dark Knight of the X-Men franchise.
I liked it a lot. Maybe I got to watch it again. But I did like it a lot. I thought it was well done. I thought it was very different. And you're right. It has the feel of a Dark Knight-ish type of film. Like it on the X-Men side. You know, it's got this sense of realism. the character.
It's an existential neo noir western.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you combine all of those, that's what Logan is. And I actually watched it. The second time I watched it, I watched the noir version, which was filmed in black and white entirely.
Yes.
Yeah, and it brings out that aesthetic. So
well, opening weekend it made 88 million.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, so I remember it being like a high number. And that's really fucking high for an R-rated film.
And now remember, production budget was only $97 million, and the total domestic gross, $226 million.
Wow, look at that, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Hugh Jackman's swan song.
Yeah, that was.
Yeah, and then we come full circle. Or do we come full circle? We get Dark Phoenix. Oh, a measly boy. $35 million.
Shocking, Lewis. Shocking.
It is the least. It's gonna, and I know it's not gonna gross. It's pretty much a flop because there's no way it can make its budget back, especially with the bad reviews and everything like that. It is the lowest grossing X-Men film.
When well, you Lewis, think let me give. Let me just give you. Film. Let me just give you some quick numbers on Apocalypse. Opening weekend, $65 million.
Okay.
The budget for the film was $178 million. Total domestic gross was only $155 million, so they didn't even break even.
Ugh. Maybe I'm guessing globally, internationally.
Global. Yeah. So foreign it made $388 million. So that's where the makeup was.
Ugh.
Yeah. That's Apocalypse.
Yeah, Dark Phoenix is gonna do much less. And remember, this film was pushed back twice. It was supposed to be released November 2018, got pushed back to Valentine's Day weekend 2019, then got pushed back again due to reshoots.
Yeah,
what
see?
Reshoots did they do here? Because, you know, the film is not very good. No. Let's just get into our reactions.
Yeah.
I agree with you because I remember texting you a couple of days prior to watching it, or actually the day before I went to go see it, and you said you didn't hate it. And I agree with you. I actually didn't despise it as much as I was anticipating.
Right.
But I will say it's not a very good film. It's just not. I think it moves a mile a minute. Mm-hmm. All of the emotional moments don't get to have the impact that they were aiming for because everything is moving so fast. So there's a lack of plot development, because the character development I guess is somewhat there, but the plot development is just very I don't know what word I'm looking for. I don't know if it was inconsistent or just lackluster, overall, and the way it ended, it just wasn't a good film, man. Like I said, I didn't hate it. I didn't despise it or anything like that. It wasn't as bad as the critics made it out to be, in my opinion. I don't think it deserves a 22% of Rotten Tomatoes, but it was just... I wasn't that disappointed because my expectations were incredibly low anyway, but it was still a disappointment nonetheless. So what are your reactions?
You know... There were only two things that saved this movie. Not saved it, but I didn't agree completely with the 22%. And I told you this over the phone when I text you. I said the train scene was by far the best scene in the film.
Oh, absolutely.
And the New York fighting scene was decent. And that made up for some of the... forgettable storyline that we were getting from the film. I left the theater and I was like, you know, I didn't hate it, right? I didn't love it. Definitely didn't love it. I best way to describe it is that's the best way. So for the last X-Men film in this series, you would figure it would give you... I mean, we're going... You know what's wrong, Lewis, is that we are so conditioned now to expect greatness from comic book movies because we're spoiled by the Marvel movies, that going into this, you know, yes, we didn't expect anything, but we were expecting something, like a little something more than what we got for this film to be it. and it just didn't get there. And I don't know. I didn't like the way they made Professor X look. Xavier. I didn't like the way they made him look. They almost made him look like this greedy, unaware leader who puts his people in danger. And I just didn't like it. It painted Professor X as this this flawed, really badly flawed leader. But when you think of Professor X and you watch the cartoons, and in my case, I didn't read really the comics. I watched the old school classic cartoon on Fox that used to come on. Mm-hmm. He's painted as this almighty, smart, brilliant, revered gentleman. And I don't know. I just in relating it to the cartoon, I know, you know, it's different, but I don't know. I just didn't enjoy the fact that they portrayed him that way. And I wanted more mutant stuff, man. I wanted more Magneto. I wanted more Storm in situations where they exhibited their power more. I just felt like this was a fast, quick, all about Phoenix, who, to tell you the truth, I like Phoenix, but then I'm indifferent about her. I'm like, she's all right, but I don't know. There was no heart for the film, if that makes sense. And only, I mean, I don't want to speak like a film student here, but like, there was just no,
but you are,
yeah, you know, but I am, but there was just no heart to it. There was no, it just felt like this cold movie that, and you could tell the shots they reshot. I know they reshot that. That train scene, you could tell they reshot the scene where they visit Jean's father's house. I know that was all probably reshoot, because I don't know, I just could tell like that part of the story, because those were all choreographed really well in the film.
Yeah, they were. That's what I was gonna say. The train sequence was very well choreographed.
Really well choreographed, really cool stuff with Magneto's power, and which was good to see. But I don't know, I just something fell short, and I think it was because I really didn't care about the story, to tell you the truth. I really didn't care about the story.
Yeah, I agree with you. It felt very hollow all throughout.
Yeah, and it was hollow. Yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't like the portrayal of Professor Xavier that much either, and I get it, because Professor X isn't perfect by any means. Like, he does what he can, and what he can, he does what he can to help mutants, and mutants who are just discovering their powers and struggling with how to fit into society and all that stuff. But they made Professor X really like as if he was almost going off the deep end, like into an alcoholic. Like, he's pouring whiskey like every other scene.
Yeah,
you know, he's reaching for his decanter. I feel like I was watching myself. I was like, wait a minute, is this Professor Xavier or is this Mr. Mercedes? I was like, well, you know, it's funny, that scene when he's in the kitchen and he's talking to Beast, Hank McCoy, and he's like pouring a drink. I'm thinking in my mind, like, hey, I'll have some of that.
You're right.
Oh my God. But you know, you're right. There should have been more. Like, if this was going to be the Dark Phoenix saga, one of the most beloved story arcs in the X-Men franchise, or even comic books in general, if this was going to be that, this epic climactic finale to the universe, the X-Men universe that Fox put out for us, there should have been more mutants, and it should have had more of an epic feel. This just felt like another lazy entry into the franchise, as opposed to an operatic finale. Mm-hmm. It felt like Apocalypse almost, you know? And I don't know which one I disliked more. Probably Apocalypse, just because that was just... Yeah. Disappointing beyond belief, because Apocalypse was supposed to be a far more epic, but that's another topic.
Yeah.
I just I thought they handled the Dark Phoenix storyline better than they did in The Last Stand all those years back. But it's still, that's not saying much, you know? That's like saying two-day rotten milk is better than one-day rotten milk. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, you know, they both suck. So, yeah. I don't know. And it's sad. It's sad the way everything just really just falls apart. And then when you get the ending, the way everything ends, you can tell that the filmmakers, the screenwriters, everybody involved, you can tell that this is the end of the line. And I think they had it with that intention where, okay, this is going to be the final X-Men film, regardless of whether or not Disney acquires Fox. Which it turned out that Disney did acquire Fox, which is probably the main reason why they did the reshoots. So with that said, they probably said in their minds, you know what, let's just throw in the towel. We cannot resurrect this franchise or continue it in any way, shape, or form without disappointing the fans. So let Disney take care of it. Let Marvel Studios take care of it. We did what we could. Mm-hmm. And that to me is a shame, because it should have gone out on a better note.
It should have. It felt lazy. Like, I agree with you. It felt lazy. It felt rushed. It felt unthought out. It didn't feel thoughtful. It felt hollow. It felt like it was almost like a tease. Like, they teased you that you were going to get something epic, but then it fell short of that. If you're going to have, like you mentioned before, if you're going to have a last film in the series, it should have felt more epic, instead of feeling like it was just one of the movies in the series. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't want to feel like the last movie is, it's just another movie in the series. You don't want to make this feel like Apocalypse. Now, I agree, Apocalypse is 10 times, to me, way worse. Way worse. But not by much, but way worse. And this, you know, I'm sitting there, and I went by myself, and I'm like, you know what?
Me too.
I'm not expecting anything. I go in, and I'm like, man, okay, they really got to this Phoenix story pretty fast. It didn't feel flushed out. Like, I keep reverting, like, it just didn't. I wanted more. The movie runtime was only like an hour and 50 something minutes. So
yeah,
they kept it really relatively low compared to Apocalypse. Apocalypse was 2 hours and 23 minutes.
Yeah, so, and that amounted to nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Amounted to nothing. So I don't know. Maybe, yeah, it just wasn't fleshed out for me, man. I give me something more with what Phoenix is, or who she is, or where this comes from, or give me something that's going to fill some time that's meaningful on screen. But instead, we just got this rushed, and they're seeing the hit. I mean, $35 million in opening weekend for an X-Men film. That's brutal. That is not good.
So, no, that's abysmal.
That's abysmal. Yeah.
You know, I do want to comment on Sophie Turner's portrayal of Jean Grey. Now, the first time we see her as Jean Grey is in X-Men Apocalypse. I didn't care for her as Jean Grey, I'll be totally honest with you, in that film. And I went into this movie thinking, you know, I don't care. She's just always going to be Sansa Stark from Game of Thrones. I just can't see her as Jean Grey. There's no... I don't know. It's not a very relatable portrayal. But right. In this movie, I do give her credit, because you can tell that she's trying her damnedest to make Jean Grey come across as relatable and a sympathetic figure. So her performance was fine. I thought her performance was solid, given the material. Mm-hmm. And despite all the limitations, I thought she delivered a pretty decent performance. Now, let me touch on those limitations for a second. You hit on some good points, for the fact that we don't really get too much of a backstory with why she's becoming the Dark Phoenix and whatnot. You know, we get that little prologue in the beginning of the film when she inadvertently kills her parents in the car accident. The problem is that since everything feels so rushed, there's a serious lack of emotion. Let's go back to X2. During X2, throughout the film, Jean Grey is showing little hints and subtle flashes of what she's about to become. Because especially during the third act of the film, where her powers, she's really using her powers to the extent where they're beyond her control, to the point where at the climax she saves everybody when the jet is about to become enveloped by the water in Alkali Lake, and she risks her life, and you see like the flames begin to flare up, and then the last shot you see the phoenix in the water, and that's how the film ends. That was a perfect way to build towards the following film, where they were going to tackle on the Dark Phoenix saga. But, you know, The Last Stand, obviously, they dropped the ball on that one. But that's how it's done. That's how you should do it. Don't do it all in one movie and then expect there to be an emotional core that the fans can care for and relate to. They gave you everything with the Phoenix all at once. I mean, I guess she had flashes of it towards the end of X-Men Apocalypse, but X-Men Apocalypse sucked anyway, so we still couldn't really relate to it.
Right. I'm going to give her props as well in this film, portraying Jean Grey. I really felt her pain. Like, I really felt her anguish, her desire to be normal again, but also have this thing, this power that's basically controlling her. I felt the conflict, and I felt she was actually believable. I was like, oh, she's not bad. I mean, compared to Apocalypse, you know, she's not bad. So I give her that. Like you said, I would have appreciated there to be a little more of what this almighty power that we call Phoenix is and things like that. Like I would have appreciated to get just something, right? Because you gotta remember the runtime of this movie was short enough so you could have put that in, of course, barring that this would be a more entertaining film that you're going to give us, like a 2-hour, 23-minute movie, of course. But I just felt that we were missing chunks of story that they then filled with bad acting and things like that. Let me just throw this out here, Lewis.
I believe it's Nicholas Holt,
his name is. I appreciate him as Beast, but I can't stand him.
You can't stand him? Really? I like him. I've always liked him as an actor.
You know, the friend of the show, Giancarlo, he pointed something out to me. He was like, I don't know how he still gets work, because that scene, he said that scene where he's yelling at Charles and when Raven died was cringeworthy.
I didn't think it was cringeworthy. Damn, man, just shitting on him. I've seen far worse actors.
Listen, I'm not saying he's like D-list or anything. I'm just saying he's 50-50 for me, put it that way. Like I like him look wise for Beast. I think he's good, and in some scenes he's believable, and he comes off as this brilliant mind, but then in the more emotional scenes, like he comes off a little too I don't feel like he's putting enough of himself in the role. Like I feel like he's doing just a role, if that makes sense. I don't feel like he's exploring Beast, right? Or exploring a different way on portraying Beast. Like, I get that from Magneto. Like, I get that from Michael Fassbender. I get that he's giving me Magneto, but he's also giving me more realistic human being guy who is on the outs, and he's leading a group of bringing a group of mutants who needs shelter and all that stuff. Like, I feel like he also brought something else to the table as far as exploring the character that I just don't get. I didn't get that with Beef, but I did get that with Jean Grey. I got that she was this vulnerable, sensitive, torn, but very headstrong character from the actress. So I appreciated her role. So, I mean, I don't know, but he sometimes bothers me, and Giancarlo brought it to my attention. I'm like, oh, you know what? I kind of agree with you. Like,
well, shout out to Giancarlo, because he has a very microscopic lens of certain things with cinema. You know what? Maybe Nicholas Hoult phoned it in. Maybe he phoned in his performance like the rest of them. Fassbender and James McAvoy, because those guys are A-list actors and they're incredible in their own right. But
right,
who knows, man? Maybe they were just like, fuck this. Like, I just want my paycheck.
Yeah.
You know?
Easy $12 million, right?
You know? Yeah, exactly. Why not, right?
Why not? Hell. Jesus. Yeah.
Now, here's the $1 million question. Letter grade. What are we giving Dark Phoenix for a letter grade? I'm going to let you go first on this one.
I'm giving it a generous C minus.
You know, I got to say the same thing. I kept on thinking about it as I was driving home from the theater. And I kept on saying to myself, you know what? Yeah, C. I wouldn't flat out give it an F or even a D. Like, yeah, I would say a C minus.
Yeah, generous C minus.
We can agree on a letter grade for once.
Yeah. Definitely generous C minus. And that is Sip Lewis. The C minus, what saved it from not getting a D?
The train sequence.
That was it.
Yeah, seriously.
The train sequence, parts of the New York City battle. That's pretty much it. That kind of saved it. And Magneto, who's probably my favorite he's my favorite character in X-Men. So and just seeing him. That's probably it.
Yeah. Well, now that we're in agreement, we'll take a short break and come back and discuss where we rank this film amongst the other. It's probably obvious, but I feel like this is going to be an interesting part of the conversation where we rank it with the other X-Men movies, as well as what we think is going to happen with the future of the franchise. So we're going to get into all that when we come back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We are trashing Dark Phoenix. Not badly as I thought we'd be trashing, but yeah, we're shitting on it for the most part. Now, this might be a no-brainer or maybe not, but seeing as how we looked at all the X-Men films in the franchise, where would you rank Dark Phoenix? Would you say it's the worst? I know, obviously, it's one of the worst. I would say it's one of the top three worst in the entire series.
Right.
But would you say it's actually the worst?
No, I wouldn't say it's the worst. I think, God, what was the worst for me? I was very disappointed with X3. Are we going as far back as like the original, like
we're talking since 2000. Yeah, we're talking nearly two decades of X-Men movies. So again, just to reiterate, there's X-Men, X2, X-Men United, X-Men The Last Stand, X-Men Origins Wolverine, X-Men First Class, The Wolverine. Stupid title. I always hated that title. yeah, The Wolverine, X-Men Days of Future Past, Deadpool, X-Men Apocalypse. We forgot to mention Deadpool 2 is opening.
I was wondering.
Deadpool 2 and then now Dark. Oh, wait, Logan. So actually, it was Days of Future Past, then Deadpool, then X-Men Apocalypse, then Logan, then Deadpool 2, and now Dark Phoenix.
See, X3 disappointed me because I thought it would be a lot better than it was. I mean, I think that's the first time we see Juggernaut, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and I very disappointed. But we got to see a decent Juggernaut in Deadpool, which was
a decent man. They knocked that shit out the park.
From what I remember, he was
kept that. They were tight-lipped about that because I remember when I saw the movie. I didn't see it in the movie theater, but when I watched it at home, and then I had the same exact reaction that Deadpool had in the film when he's like breaking the fourth wall. Because when Juggernaut comes out that vehicle, I was like, wait a minute. Oh my God, that's fucking Juggernaut. I was like, holy fucking shit.
Yeah, listen, from what I remember, because it was a little while ago, from what I remember, I really enjoyed that Juggernaut. So I feel like they made up for it big time.
Yeah.
But I guess I was disappointed with 3. Apocalypse was shockingly bad. I'm gonna rate Apocalypse and Apocalypse as being the worst. Then I would put this in there at Dark Phoenix. And then I would put one of the Wolverine movies. I probably would put...
Please say Origins.
Yeah, definitely Origins. So it would be Apocalypse. It would be Apocalypse, Origins, Dark Phoenix.
Yeah, that's pretty much my order too. But I would say hands down, the worst in the franchise is still X-Men Origins. The first
X-Men Wolverine. Origins.
Yes. That was good God almighty. I fucking went to the theater to see that. And D'Angelo can attest to this too. We were so excited for it and everything. And, you know, because we had saw the Rotten Tomatoes score. We were like, damn, is it really that bad? It can't possibly be that bad. Yo, we walked out the theater pretty disappointed. We were like, yeah, nah, I don't know, man.
Wow.
Like this sucked. Like, they ruined Deadpool. I mean, Gambit was cool and whatnot, but, like, they just completely fucked up the continuity. The saving grace of that movie was Hugh Jackman and Liev Schreiber, like, their performances.
Yeah.
Liev Schreiber's Sabretooth was good, but, dude, that sucked, man. I'm glad that they redeemed themselves years later with the Wolverine, because the Wolverine was actually pretty good.
And, yeah, like
the whole Japanese storyline and stuff, that was good. And if you've ever seen the uncut version, the unrated version, I guess uncut, unrated, whatever, the director's cut, I should say, that is actually super good for the fact that he's dropping F-bombs and it's a lot more violent.
Mm. But does it still take a? But would you still? Okay, let's say the director's cut came out. Instead of the first cut, would you still put Origins in the worst film category?
Oh, no. The director's cut that I'm talking about is for The Wolverine.
Oh, for The Wolverine. Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. The one where he's in Japan. Like, no, I like that one. That one was good.
Okay.
Yeah, no. X-Men Origins, I don't even think a director's cut could save that.
Damn. I don't remember. Man, you know, it... What was this? This was Origins was in
2009.
Yeah.
And let me tell you something. I've only seen it once. That was enough for me.
That was it.
I did not have any desire to revisit it. And it's a shame because I adore Wolverine. You know? And I love Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. I think he was absolutely perfect. He was a godsend for that character. And whoever they try to cast for Wolverine going forward, good luck.
Yeah, that's real big shoes to fill, man.
Huge, huge shoes.
I don't even know if they can do that. I mean, jeez.
I'm going to be so apprehensive towards it. I'm going to be like, no, Hugh Jackman, mm-hmm. No, thank you. Not having it.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that's basically where. Well, that's good to know that we both don't feel that Dark Phoenix was the worst. I don't think it's the worst, but it actually has. It's actually the worst review out of the entire franchise.
Which is crazy because if it's the worst reviewed, I'm thinking like, okay, worst reviewed, then I got to read some of the reviews for Apocalypse because I would think Apocalypse would be up there, but apparently not. I'm gonna find some of those.
I know, right? You know, I'm gonna have to actually just sit down and revisit Apocalypse.
Unfortunately, I'm thinking I might have to do the same thing.
Yeah, no, I've only seen that one time too in the movie theater. I haven't had the desire to revisit it, but one day I am going to sit down and revisit it just to see, like, just to pick it apart, basically, just shit on it. Because sometimes it's good to revisit bad movies, you know?
It is, because maybe, and who knows, Lewis, you may get something different from it. You may actually be like, you know what? Dark Phoenix is probably the worst movie ever. So you just may switch the order of the worst. That's all.
Yeah, I know, right? I may have to buy the first class collection on Blu-ray or 4K or something, and just to see how it went from first class to Days of Future Past, and it just took a nosedive after that.
Took a nosedive, big time. Yep.
Yes, it's unfortunate. Let's talk about the future of the franchise. So we obviously know that Fox is now acquired by Disney. Kevin Feige said something interesting recently. He said in an interview that they are going to leave the X-Men franchise alone for the near future. Like, they have no plans on touching it until they figure out what they want to do with Phase 4 of the MCU. Now, he could have been giving the honest answer, or he could have just been tight-lipped about the whole operation, because Marvel Studios, they run a very tight ship, obviously, and they don't let things leak out just like that. So maybe he's doing that just to calm the excitement down or curb any type of appetite for destruction,
you think it's a work?
So to speak. It could be a work. It could be. It could be. Because the way he made it seem... Well, he says that it's going to be at least another 5 to 10 years before they even touch X.
Damn.
Do you really think it's going to be that long? I personally don't think so. I think within 5 years, it's very possible that they could announce an X-Men reboot.
Well, let's think about it for a second. With the lineup of films that they have coming out, I believe there's going to be another Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, another Black Panther,
another Doctor Strange. They got the Spider-Man coming out.
Another Ant-Man too, right?
Ant-Man, possibly. I think so, with the Ant-Man.
Another Captain Marvel.
Captain Marvel. Did we say Thor? I don't know if they're doing another Thor. No, not Thor. I'm sorry. Captain Marvel. So, honestly, it may be about that time. If you think about it, like, it... may not be until another 5 or 6 years till they actually touch that.
Yeah, I believe when you frame it that way, that makes sense.
Yeah, I think they're going to be extremely strategic and very smart on how they bring it back. And I think what they want to do is let Phoenix die down, of course, and all the movies that preceded it, and kind of let it rest, and then bring it back out of nowhere with some freshness to it. I think coming back in like 3 years or even 4 is a little too soon. Give it like 5, damn near 10 if they're going to go 10 years, and I think you got a whole nother crop of audience that's ready to receive it.
It's good point.
So, I mean, yeah, I believe it. I believe them.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I wasn't thinking of it that way. Maybe it's just a fanboy in me that's like, I want another one.
Listen, after X3, I was like, good God, man, please reboot the entire thing. Because I was so upset with X1 and X2 to me are classics.
Oh, yeah. X2 is one of the greatest comic book sequels ever made.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And I love the gritty gorilla-ness of X1. Like, I really like it felt like a low budget comic book movie, but it was so good. Like, it felt like it in a way, but it did give you, like, it did wet your palate a little bit when it came to these comic book movies, because you were like, oh man, this could be something if studios begin to back these type of movies, because at the time studios weren't backing this. That's why it had a low budget. They were like,
yeah, it only had a budget of like $100 million, I think, or probably less.
So I mean, I don't think they had much to work with. So seeing the success of it was great, and that kind of just opened the doors for other movies, other X-Men movies. But those two top, you know, amazing movies. So I would like to see them kind of let it sit, let it die for a little bit, and go from there.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best course of action, quite frankly, because that article that I sent you from Collider, really delves into the entire film franchise of the X-Men, because those writers, or at least two or three of them, they are avid fans of the animated series that we grew up on. And that's how one of them, they explained in the article that's actually how they were introduced to X-Men. And that's actually what turned them into a Marvel Comics fan. Ditto, same thing for me. That series was really important for me in my childhood, because it exposed me to the X-Men. And again, it really made me, like, obviously I was into Batman and Superman prior to that, and I loved Batman, I adored Batman, and I still do. But that X-Men cartoon, that animated series, was like, wow. All of these colorful characters, and yeah, it really was. And all these adult oriented themes, it was very, very mature for a Saturday morning cartoon.
Very mature. And then,
and you know, and 2 years later, when you had the Spider-Man animated series, that did the same thing for me too. The Spider-Man animated series, again, very mature themes, and just very well made for a fucking Saturday morning cartoon. So, one of the things that's an interesting thing that they pointed out in that Collider article. But another interesting thing that they pointed out too was that going forward, Marvel Studios has to be very careful with how they introduce or reintroduce the X-Men. Because of the fact that they're mutants, the MCU has always ignored the term mutants. They weren't allowed to use the term mutants because of the whole Fox thing. So that kind of ruined it in that sense. So anybody or any character in the MCU, and this is including Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and all the TV shows, any superhero that had powers had to be like a genetically altered person, like with some sort of lab experiment or an accident. They weren't allowed to be called mutants. They're just, you know, special people. What is it that's going to set the X-Men apart from people like the Avengers? You know, what makes them so special now that they're going to be in the MCU? You know, you got to give them a reason or a purpose for their existence now. And that's going to be something that they're obviously going to work on for the next 5 to 10 years. If that's the plan to roll them out in 10 years.
Very interesting. That's a good point. I mean, yeah, that's, and you just said it. I mean, that's probably why you're going to want to take some time and think this out. Strategically think about how you're going to introduce them into this world now. And listen, Lewis, Marvel, if anything, we can sit back and let Marvel do it and expect a pretty good result, I think. So I think I think it's in good hands. I think it's in good hands. But that'll be interesting, man. I would love to see what take they're going to do with it, or where they may take the films, where they may, what things they may take out or not elaborate on. Like, I would love to see how they're going to now bring these characters all together in some way. So it's gonna be very interesting, man. It's gonna be very interesting.
Yeah, that's gonna be awesome because they have to do the same thing for Fantastic Four too.
Yes, please do Fantastic Four over. My God.
Yeah, that's inevitable. They're gonna do that.
Jesus.
My theory is now that we know that what the snap did at the end of Endgame. That snap apparently, you know, it opened up parallel universes and alternate timelines and shit like that. That would make the most sense if you were to introduce mutants and X-Men. They could say, like, somehow these mutants have been living among us, or we didn't know that they were, but then the snap just made it evident. Now they're all over. You know, I don't know, like something along those lines. Like now we live with these, you know, people that live with these genetic mutations and they have abilities.
That's not a bad idea, man, actually. I see where you're going with that. And if you're going to try to connect that to it, that would be the most believable. That would make sense.
Yeah, because you can't, as a fan, you can't have me possibly believing that the Avengers were fighting fucking crime and saving the universe, but yet, so the X-Men were just chilling in their school the whole time,
yeah, right,
in New York, and the same thing with Fantastic Four. The Baxter Tower is in New York City. You know what I'm saying? Like, they were just staying in their hotel, but they had an outer space mission, and they just never crossed paths with Captain Marvel or the Guardians of the Galaxy, you know?
Yeah. See, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. I mean, listen, they're going to have to figure it out. Sounds like they got time, though.
Yeah, and I would urge them to take their time. This is not something that can be rushed.
Yeah, yeah.
There was one last point I wanted to make before we end this episode. Oh, yes, that's what it was. So there is one more film in this X-Men franchise, believe it or not.
Yeah, okay.
You know which one it is?
One more film in the franchise.
It's been delayed by like 2 years.
It's been delayed by 2 years?
And it continues to be delayed.
Is it...
It's the New Mutants.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the New Mutants. Technically, it's you know, a part of the X-Men universe because... obviously dealing with mutants.
Wait a second, dude, what happened to that movie?
Listen, that shit was supposed to come out in the spring of 2017.
Because
I remember that's when they dropped the trailer for it. And it was supposed to be...
You're right.
Yeah, it was supposed to be a horror film. So the same way Deadpool brought in... Basically the same way Deadpool took the superhero genre, flipped it on its head by making it into a comedy, and then the same way Logan did that by making it to an existential Western, so to speak. New Mutants was supposed to do that and make it a superhero horror film. That's kind of like what Brightburn just did. But yeah, the New Mutants has been going through reshoots, delays. Supposedly it was so fucking bad that they had to reshoot everything. And it is now slated for a 2020 release. There's a big theory going around that it's probably just going to end up on Hulu.
Oh, damn.
Ultimately, because of how bad it is. The actress that plays Arya Stark is in it.
Yes.
Yeah, and like all these actors who filmed this shit like 3-4 fucking years ago, by the time this shit is released, they're going to be a little older, you know?
Wow. I remember
that. Yeah, yeah. So I think Fox is just like, yo, we don't give a fuck about any of this shit anymore. Like, just do whatever you have to do. Put it on Hulu, put it on Disney Plus, put it on Netflix. You know, sell it to the guy on the corner for free. Like, we don't care.
Damn, that's right. You know, it's funny. I remember looking at, or didn't they have trailers for the shit in there?
Well, yeah, they had trailers. That's what I'm saying. Like, even if you look back at the trailers, you're like, You could see that it had potential, but apparently it didn't test screen very well, So they had to go back and do reshoots after reshoots, and I don't know, man. A very plagued production, so to speak.
Wow. Damn, I see that. I see that. I'm looking at it now, and I'm like, oh my God, yeah, that's right. I remember seeing this. Yep.
Yeah, it's so bad. I want to see the finished final product, though. So whether it ends up on Hulu or getting a theatrical release, I do want to see it.
Yes.
So any final thoughts on Dark Phoenix, the X-Men franchise?
You know, Lewis, thank you very much, Fox, for making this one pretty shitty. like it, you know, the train scene saved it. I know that definitely was a reshoot. I know they went back in there and did some more cool stuff with mutant powers and all that stuff to kind of give it that look, and they did great with that. But it felt hollow. It was just missing, you know, it was missing some type of soul, man. Just didn't have that. And to end this series or this franchise like that, just and you see it, and now they're seeing it with the $35 million opening weekend. You know, I mean, I think, I don't know, I gotta find a movie that made more than that. I think Secret Life of Pets made more than that.
Yeah,
and,
it did.
I saw that movie, and that movie was just okay. Like, it was all right. It's funny. It was semi-funny, but, I mean,
yeah,
man, that's what you were up against, and you're an X-Men film. See, that's the crazy thing. So, thanks for nothing. That's where I would have... That's where I'm going to leave that.
Thanks for nothing. Yeah, exactly. I want to say a big thank you to Fox for creating the... you know, bringing the X-Men franchise to life and all that good stuff. But, you know, ultimately a big thank you for nothing, because it led to nothing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I shouldn't say it led to nothing, but it ultimately ended up in a huge disappointment. So, but yeah, thank you for joining me on this episode. That wraps up our review/trashing of Dark Phoenix, which is the culmination of the Fox iteration of the X-Men franchise. Join us for our next episode. It's going to be a pro wrestling related episode. All right. Talking about Goldberg versus Undertaker. Another debacle in pop culture this past weekend.
Oh boy.
So yeah, without further ado, it's been fun, man. Join us on the next one.
Absolutely.
Peace.
Later.